This is Richard Blade, the voice of the 80s and Gay Rock Radio, and you're listening to the voice of 91 Reasons, Jeff Tucker. Totally awesome.
You're listening to 91 Reasons, a journey into the twisted landscape of pop culture. Keep your hands and arms inside the podcast at all times. And now, the voice, Jeff Tucker.
Hey, I'm back with another look at my high school career, where we've made it all the way to 11th grade, my junior year. This was the year that I was going to turn everything around. I was going to show that being a drama kid wasn't a drama geek, that drama could be exciting and fun, and that I could somehow, if I tried, I could get a girlfriend. But we're getting ahead of ourselves, aren't we? So, 11th grade, man, junior year. This is where, in high school, you really start to feel like you're part of the system, you know? You know, because remember, Norwalk started with 8th grade, so 8, 9, 10. This is 4th year already. For any other high school, I'd be a senior, because it would have started at freshman year. But for Norwalk, it was junior year, so I was ready to start my junior year. My mom and I went down to the Chess King outlet across from Norwalk Square, across from Pioneer Chicken. Right behind Pup and Taco. And I got my clothes at Chess King. And you know what? Here's the thing. They were good clothes. They were stylish. They were nice. They were a good price my mother could afford, because we didn't have a lot of money. The problem is that everybody went to Chess King. So when I got to school, I noticed, like, the shirt that I liked that was this like a gray granite with red spots. I have a picture of it on the page. It's the one I'm wearing when I'm sitting with Terry drinking. One of my favorite shirts. Like, everybody had that shirt. So, now, see, I didn't care about that. But I know a lot of guys, a lot of girls did. Like, you can't wear what everybody else is wearing. Well, I mean, that's what fashion is, right? Wearing what everybody else is wearing. So it never really bothered me that the clothes I got from Chess King Outlet, not Chess King at the mall, Chess King Outlet, because I wouldn't hit the mall until senior year or late junior year. There was a clothing store called, I'm going to get it wrong, it was called J.W. West, I think, and I made my pilgrimage there to get what every drama guy slash Dungeons and Dragons slash movie fan slash outcast needs. And that's my long black trench coat and my Freddy Krueger slash Indiana Jones fedora. Yeah, I was a chick magnet. Are you kidding? But that was later in the year. We're all the way back. We're rewinding all the way back to the start of junior year. This was a good year for me. There was a lot going on in high school. The real stuff would come, the real successes, for me, they wouldn't come until senior year. You know, I was a complete bumbling fool all the way through high school. And then in senior year, I kind of got my S together, you know, like most people. I mean, everybody's a late bloomer, right? There's only a few that get it together early, and you look up to them. You know, I look up to people. My friend Steve had graduated the year before, so I was on my own junior year. I had my group of friends, and they were slowly getting tighter, and you know, we were hanging out more. And for a guy like me, hanging out meant getting away from home, and getting away from home and getting away from Berg. So I was all for it. I was never home. I was always on the go. I was either doing a production at school, hanging out at the trailer park, Taco the Town, or the video store or making treks up to Hollywood. I mean, anything to not be home and be subjected to the constant battle that was going on between me and Berg. But, you know, Norwalk High junior year, let's talk about what was around. Because by junior year, everybody that I knew was getting jobs. And I didn't have a job at that point. Me and Toby had delivered flyers for Circus Pizza a couple of times. I mean, he paid $5. It wasn't a big deal. But I wouldn't get a job until the summer after junior year. So, but I watched a lot of the older friends I had and older people I looked up to get jobs, you know. We used to hang out at, this is when George's Market became WGNE Food Warehouse, ultimately becoming Herman's Hallmark. So we used to go in the Hallmark store a lot and buy stickers. I mean, what do you do? We played video games at McCoy's, which eventually became Crawford's, and stickers at Herman's Hallmark. And then we jumped over to, across the way to get some food at Bud's Tacos, the best burritos we ever had. And then I spent a lot of time at the True Value Hardware Store. What was I doing at the True Value Hardware Store? I wasn't into any kind of tools. I didn't know how to fix anything. I wasn't old enough to buy spray paint without my mom being there. But there was a girl who worked there that I had a crush on. So I would always find a reason to go into True Value to see if she was working. And I just, like, it's so funny. Like, what was I doing? Well, I was, God forbid, I was being normal. And for a guy like me to be normal, boy, that's a new plateau. That's a revelation, right? That's a revelation. Down the way we'd go to Ralph's to shop. Remember they had all that plain wrap stuff? It would say beer. They had shirts that said shirt and hats that said hat. Plain white with a blue stripe. The lowest of the low. And hey, you know what? I ate a lot of it. I ate a lot of bread. And I drank a lot of cola. I mean, plain wrap was even lower than Springfield. But, I mean, again, I've said it on the show a million times. And if you're just tuning in, it's the motto of the show is if you have something to tell someone, you need to tell them before it's too late. That's the motto of the show. But the second motto is the reality that you are given as a child, you just accept. You don't, the ones on TV looked alien to you. You have no idea that you can change your social status. You were just given a station. And my station was we ate plain wrap bread. And sometimes we had plain wrap jelly. But then if you head a little farther down, there was a Warehouse music store. I know, right? And then Norwalk Square had Licorice Pizza and had a Market Basket for a while. But then Market Basket went out of business and became the first 99-cent store in the area. And I remember my mom and I going there and like, wait a minute, everything in here is a dollar? Everything is 99 cents? That's unbelievable. And it was one of the first things. Remember, everything used to have a price tag. You know, I don't know how old you are, but everything used to have a price tag. They employed people with pricing guns to put a price tag on every item. And the 99 cent store didn't have any of that. Because everything was 99 cents or 2 for $0.99 or 3 for $0.99. And that just became a cool place to go because if you didn't have a lot of money and I didn't have a lot of money, you could, hey, I got $5. I can get 4 items at the 99 cent store because of tax, you know? And the Norwalk Square was the place to be because Video Depot was there. And that's where I rented all my movies. Video Depot. Multi-video. I mean, I worked at Multi-video. Late 1988, early 1989, I had a job working at Multi-video. So we'll get to that in a minute. It may have been later I got the job, now that I think about it, because it wasn't my first job. Okay, we'll get to it. I mean, it doesn't matter, right? We got to get to school. So junior year starts, and my mother decides I've taken typing, and I've taken a few other electives, drama being the main one. But I need to be more well-rounded, she says. So I ended up in Mr. Liu's automotive class. And here's the thing. You know, there are teachers in your life that you look up to. You know, Mr. Benton, Mr. David, Maggie Regalado. Teachers that change your life. That see in you something that nobody else sees and decides to nurture it. And then there's Mr. Liu, who looked at me and said, this is an effing geek, a nerd. I don't want him in my class, and I'm just going to ignore him. So I was he didn't bully me. He was not a bully, but I was ignored in that class. I didn't count in that class. And I was happy to be left alone because it was one of those things where you ever get in a roller coaster and as soon as the lap bar goes down, you go, what have I done? Why did I agree to this? The first time I stepped in that class, I was like, what am I doing here? So Mr. Liu taught me how to take apart an alternator and put it back together, take apart a disc brake and put it back together. And let me tell you, that is no easy task. And I think if I learned anything out of Mr. Liu's class was a greater respect for people who work with their hands, for mechanics. You know, these guys, I mean, it's hard work. It is not easy. Mr. Liu, all this thing where he had a machine that could diagnose the problem with cars. This is long before any kind of computerized anything. It was a big green screen like you'd see on a submarine in a 1950s movie. He could hook it up to the car and tell you what was wrong with the car. Well, the thing is, this thing also gave out an electric shock. So what he liked to do was have everybody join in a circle, hold hands, and then he would grab onto the shock generator and you could see everybody stiffen up as they were being shocked. And I was like, I want nothing to do with that. No, oh, come on, Tucker, we're all done. I'm not doing it. I am not doing it. Are you insane? So, I mean, that's where he probably thought like, well, this kid's not part of the team. No, I'm not. If the team is, we're all going to get shocked. I am not part of the team. I bow out. He also taught me how to weld. And there are two types of welding, acetylene torch welding using a flame like you see in the movies, and arc welding, which uses electricity that is not as common, but is, you know, probably used more often than not. Acetylene torch welding was fine. I learned how to do it. You just had to do a certain type of like circular weld. What was I doing? I'm wearing a helmet. I look like Darth Vader. I have a torch in my hand and I'm trying to get two pieces of metal to stick together. But hey, I did it. Now, arc welding, totally different thing. Because here's the thing with arc welding. You can't even hint at looking at it. Because if you look at it too long, it will burn your retinas out. And he was very clear on this. So the helmet that they give you is 10 times as dark. And you have to clamp the first clamp to the metal. And then you use the second one with the welding material to complete the circuit. And then they tell you, don't look at the where it's going to weld. It's too bright. And don't touch the metal or you'll electrocute yourself and probably die. And I remember looking at Mr. Liu and going, why are we learning this? Someone's going to die. He's like, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. I'm like, so I'll be holding an electrified rod with enough voltage to kill myself while wearing a helmet that I cannot see out of. And I felt like Luke Skywalker with the blast shield down. How am I supposed to fight? You'll be fine. There's no force that allows me to see through it. And when you finally get the nerve to do the arc weld through the little tiny viewport, all you see is a pinpoint of light that tells you you're kind of in the right area. And there were some guys, God bless them, they were amazing at this. They could do it all day. Me, I was lost. And I thought, this is it. This is how I die. This is where I end. So I ended up, I passed the class. You know, I did everything that he expected me to do. The one thing that was weird about Lou's class, and I think, here's the thing, I would bitch and moan about taking apart a disc brake or an alternator, or he taught us how to change a tire. And you know what? That was a skill I needed. But he also taught us how to use the machine that puts the rubber tire on the rim. I mean, that's an amazing piece of machinery. And it has to be loaded in, clank, clank, right, clank, clank, clank. And then it spins around in a circle and puts the tire. You put some lubricant on it, and then it spins the tire around. And it was one of those things where, you know, I can barely lift the tire because I'm a wimpy guy at that time. I'm, you know, have I changed? I don't know. And I slam the tire on. I clamp down the thing. I use the little swabby thing to put the water on. And it didn't work. And let me show you. No, I want to do it. I would spend the entire hour until I got it right. And I mean, maybe Lou saw like, hey, he's trying, so I'm going to give him a B. And that's great, right? You can't excel at everything. And I was no way ever going to excel at automotive. But I did what I had to do. And again, there were also moments where Lou didn't feel like doing anything, so you put a movie on. Now, I was all about movie day. That's great. Except Lou's movies were motocross. And there's a movie called Any Given Sunday. And it's not about football. Any Given Sunday is about guys who go out in the desert and race four-wheel drive vehicles. And these movies are like 3 hours long. They take multiple days to watch. And they're... if you're into that thing, you're in heaven. And if you're not like me, it's mind-numbing. You see how the Japanese race motorcycles and guys running dirt bikes up hills and jumping. And I just, you know, I never watched any of those surf movies, you know, like Endless Summer. I never got into this kind of stuff. So I'm just sitting there like, oh my God. So maybe that's where I decided I was going to start writing stuff, because I'd rather sit and write than stare at this. It just doesn't interest me. It just doesn't interest me. There was a guy in the class with me named Andy. He was into it. So I would follow Andy's lead. Now, Andy was a great guy, funny guy. I still talk to him on Facebook. And Andy raced dirt bikes on the weekend. So Any Given Sunday was his life. So of course he enjoyed it. And Andy taught me, and I've never forgotten this. He would go, yeah, man, I went out and I raced the dirt bikes on the weekend. And I you know, rev it up. And you go, brip, 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 brah, brip, brip, brah. And that's the engine going, brah. All I hear is a guy going, brah. I go, you're saying brah. No, I'm going, brip, 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 brah. I go, I don't, okay, hey, it's cool. He was into it. And I've never ridden a dirt bike. I bet it's fun. I bet I'd break my leg or my neck at this point. But I survived automotive, Mr. Lou. I got the hell out of his class. And for the rest of the year, I ended up taking plastics shop with Mr. Crab. Now, Mr. Crab was this, like, Mr. Crab was in bad shape. He could barely move. I don't know what his affliction was, but he was all like sort of stiff, and he couldn't move his neck, and he would go, what? And he would turn his whole body like the bad guy in Despicable Me. Like, what? I mean, he looked like that guy. What? Huh? What? And Mr. Crab taught plastics. Now, I took the plastics pretty well. Like, I got the gist of it. The problem is that the first couple classes, you have to follow a strict curriculum. You have to make a keychain. You have to make a vacuum form. You have to do all these things that are very particular, which I did. They weren't very good, but I followed directions. I buffed them out. You know, I used the Bondo, and I used the Plexi, and I did everything I had to do, so that like the third or fourth time I took his class, I could do whatever I wanted as long as it was plastic. Well, that opened the floodgates for me. So I kept bringing in model kits, and I would build speeder bikes from Return of the Jedi and custom cars. And he would just look at me. What are you doing, Tucker? I'm building a model, Mr. Crab. It's plastic. Uh-huh. And then here's the thing where Crab and I sort of reached a plateau where he finally got me. Like, I'm not just a dumbass. Like, I get plastics. I'm good at it. I got really good at it. And I brought in a full-size fiberglass Darth Vader helmet. Someone had gotten a copy of a copy of a copy. And it wasn't mine. It belonged to somebody else. But I sanded it. I buffed it out. We painted it. We made it look sweet. And that, I mean, that took weeks. And he like, okay, I get it. All right, you're pretty good, Tucker. All right. And then he eased off on me. And Crab and I got along pretty well. He assumed I was insane. And I was so used to that from all the other teachers that it was no big deal for this guy to think I was nuts. What do I care? What do I care? What I cared about was an endless supply of free plexiglass. So I would come up with crazy stuff to make, and I would just make it. You know, it wasn't like I took wood shop with Bjorkman. He really despised me because the stuff I made was weird. I made a holster for my V gun from the show V. I made a castle. Like, he just was like, oh, nerd. But Crab sort of got it, and Crab allowed me to make, you know, I made some V. V was big at the time. I made some V code cards, you know, like keys that open doors and communicator devices. I even brought in a V gun one time made out of resin and buffed that out real nice. So, you know, Crab and I, we got along, and I felt bad for the guy because, you know, you talk to him and he was just so stiff. You know, he was so stiff, right? But, you know, I was also in drama class at the same time. Again, drama was always sixth period. So if something came up, I could get out of school early and it wouldn't affect me. I mean, I did mucho work for the drama club, you know. And the productions in junior year, there was no big production play-wise. We were out of money. We'd spent it all. So we had to have a year of recharging our batteries and refilling the coffers. So on the play front, we did, we tried to go to competition and we did a play called Creeps. Now, if you've ever seen Creeps or read it, Creeps is about these guys that are all handicapped in some way and they're in a bathroom. The whole play takes place in a bathroom and they're at like this center where handicapped people go to get job skills. Which means in the context of the play, they sand blocks down. Like, it's just something to keep you busy with no end in sight, no goal, no finished product, nothing. It's a pretty good play, except the part they wanted me to play was a guy in a wheelchair. And the guy in the wheelchair has the filthiest mouth. At one point, he reads an excerpt from a pornographic magazine of a sex act. And I remember going to the director, John, and saying, I can't do this, man. I can be this character. I can learn to use a wheelchair because part of the play was the character had to balance on the wheelchair because you had to portray that you'd been in the wheelchair your whole life. So I got a wheelchair and I practiced every day for this play to learn how to do all these tricks and make it look effortless. Like, I put a lot of work into this play, but I couldn't do the foul language. Like, it was really dirty. I had no problem with the F word. What I had a problem was describing the sex acts. And I went and I said, I can't do this. You have to cut this out of the play. And he finally agreed, like, cause I wasn't going to do it. And we worked this play pretty much, you know, like a long time. And the idea was we were going to take it to competition. Well, one of the guys in the play just did not feel like he was ready. And he didn't tell us that until way at the end when we were ready to present this thing. And part of the play is the character that guy played was constantly saying he was going to quit the center and go back to his life at home doing nothing. So when the actor turned and said, I'm leaving, we all said, that's not the line. And he said, no, I'm really leaving. We kind of had to say, what are you talking about? Oh, I'm leaving the play. Oh, in the middle of the scene, you're leaving the play. Yeah, I can't do this. Okay, and he left. And I remember, like, there's the first production that ever just, it just fell apart. It just slipped through your fingers like sand. And I said, I thought we were all committed to this thing. I learned how to use a wheelchair for this play. And now you're telling me it's canceled? And John was like, it's too late. We can't bring a ringer in. We're done. Oh, it's devastating. So we tried another play for competition, Actor's Nightmare, where it's about a guy who stumbles into a play and he doesn't know any lines and people are talking in circles around him. It's a really funny play by Christopher Durang. And again, I threw myself into this thing only to watch one of the co-stars collapse and just say, there's too many lines. I'll never remember it. I'm done. And I got really agitated at that point. I said, we're supposed to be thespians here. We're supposed to be doing plays, and we're not doing plays. We're rehearsing and then watching it collapse. This sucks. So I said, look, we're done with the competitions. Let's do something completely different. Let's do something that the drama club can get behind and make some money. How about that? We'll do a project that's not a play, but will involve the entire drama club and a whole lot of other people, and we'll make some money. Well, what's that, Jeff? Let's do a haunted house for the school. Now, it had never been done before. I'm not sure how our teacher, Maggie, got permission from the school to do it, but for two nights in October, we had control of the drama room, the hallway leading to the multi-purpose room, and the multi-purpose room, which was massive, to put on a haunted house that we saw fit. This was my first foray into any kind of haunted attraction. And I loved it. This is what I was born to do. So we just went to town on this thing. Everybody was, the layout was carved up. People were given pieces to put together. I was given the first room, the second room, and the hallway. So I was like, done. We got it. So the drama room became a haunted house. Excuse me. The whole thing was a haunted house. The drama room became a graveyard. We made 100 tombstones out of cardboard. We had dry ice. And that morphed into a scene from Alien. We managed to borrow an honest-to-goodness Don Post alien head, which was never for sale in the market, but we knew somebody who had one. So we had an alien helmet, alien mask. We had a guy screaming, get out of here! They're about to attack! We were doing aliens. It was fantastic. That was the segue into the hallway. When you turn right into the hallway, it was Camp Crystal Lake. We had a sign that said Crystal Lake. We had a guy dressed as Jason with a big machete. And he scared you to the next room, which I had built a boiler room. Everything was burnt and charred. And there was a Freddy Krueger, a guy dressed as Freddy Krueger. The joke was we had a really short guy who wanted to be Freddy. And Toby kept calling him Pocket Freddy. And I said, Pocket Freddy can't be Freddy. We need a regular Freddy. So my Steve's brother Aaron became Freddy. So it had a strobe light. It had stuff like a child's tricycle. Like, it was really dark, you know. And we had the soundtrack and the mute. The music playing from Nightmare on Elm Street. And I worked, you know, I was the guy who welcomed you at the door and guided you all the way to the other door and then sent you on your way. And let me tell you, this was the most fun the drama club had ever had. It was better than any play we did. The camaraderie, it took weeks to build this thing, to run it, to get it up on its feet. And then we made more money than any play we had ever done. I think we were charging $1.50 or $2 to go through, and they were lined up down the block. Once you passed the Freddy Krueger section, there was, I think, a scarecrow, because I have a picture of my friend Becky dressed as a scarecrow. There were some scarecrows. There was a black and white room with a strobe light and people done up with black and white makeup. There was an evil doctor operating this guy, Jeff. Jeff was operating on this woman. And here's the thing. We actually found a girl at school who was born without a hand. And we convinced her, and she was so into it, to get one of those battery-operated hands where the fingers wiggled. And she would walk up to people and, like, drop the hand from where it was supposed to be to the ground. This freaked people out so bad that people left crying. You rounded a bend and you headed back up to the stage where there was a Frankenstein scene going on. I had met these people at a convention, and this guy Randy was huge. So he was Frankenstein and his buddy was the doctor, and he would come to life and menace people. Then you turn right, and you were in a, we used all the stuff from Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat to make a mummy's tomb. So there was a mummy and people dressed as mummies and sacrifice, you know, priestesses and priests. Then you headed into the insane asylum where we had all these girls dressed in rags pleading to be let out. I mean, it was really freaky. Really freak. And I have pictures somewhere of all this. I can't find them, but I do have a picture of the entire cast, which I will put up on the 91 Reasons Facebook page. And then you were out, but there was also like unknown variables. Like my friend David, who was big in the drama club, and this was his senior year. He didn't want to be in one spot. So instead he put on a dress, put on makeup, grabbed a trash can lid and just ran through the hallways as people were trying to get through. And he would slam the can lid on the ground or the wall. So this was huge. It was the biggest success we ever had. And part of the promotion for this was me and David and Felipe and a couple other people, we drove up to Los Angeles the week before the project opened. It was called Haunted High. The week before, and we ambushed the offices of Kiss FM. Now, Kiss FM was the biggest radio station around. K-Rock was still way alternative. They were not near as popular as they would become in the late 80s, later 80s, early 90s. Rick Dees was the number one DJ in LA. Rick Dees was huge. It's hard to even describe how big Rick Dees was. He was massive. He had his own TV show. He had the radio show. He had a number one single with Disco Duck. He did television commercials. He was huge. So we got to the offices of Kiss FM to promote this haunted house. And we didn't know what we were doing. We were just walking around hoping to find somebody. And you'll never believe, we're standing there, the elevator opens, and Rick Dees walks out. And he goes, "Hey kids, what's up?" And he takes off at a brisk walk before we can get to him. And he goes through a door, and the door slams. And we're like, was that? That was Rick Dees, right? That was him. That was Rick Dees. And a few minutes later, someone from the radio station comes out. "What's going on?" "Well, you know, we're here from Norwalk High. We're doing a haunted house. And we just want to see if Rick would talk about it." And the person goes, "Well, I'll be right back." So like 20 minutes later, they brought us in and they put us on the air. Rick Dees was like, "I'm here with some kids from Norwalk High. And what's going on?" We're doing a haunted house. And there's a big facade of a house. We had a lot of folks back home tape it, but I can't find if I have a copy of it. I talked to Felipe not that long ago, and he thought maybe David had a copy of us on the air with Rick, but I can't find it. But it was really cool of him to do that, and I'm sure it boosted attendance of the attraction. And we left that radio station like feeling like rock stars. Like, we were on the air drive time with Rick Dees on Kiss FM. You know, I mean, that's cool, right? And it showed like a new direction for the drama club. You know, we were doing cool things. We had this haunted house thing going. So, like I said, the haunted house was great. It was so much fun. Everybody who worked on it worked so hard, and we had a great time doing it. And that allowed us in the spring to finally do a show for competition called The Fatal French Dentist. It's not a very good show. It's a comedy of manners about couples trying to one-up each other with the most exciting house guest they can, or dinner guest they can come up with. It's dumb. I didn't care for it. We took it to competition. Part of the problem was I had grown my hair long. If you've been on the 91 Reasons page, I posted a picture of the mullet I had. So to do this part, we had to fold my hair up and make it look like I had a business cut. Like, it was just so weird. It was an interesting show. It was the last piece of drama I got to do with David before he graduated. David had been a good friend all through high school. And I enjoyed the process of doing the show, even if I didn't enjoy the show. We took it to competition. Nothing happened. We learned a valuable lesson taking it to competition. You have to be so polished that you can see yourself in the play. I mean, you have to be so polished. And we just weren't. We just weren't at that level. So, you know, whatever. But here's the thing about junior year. I grew my hair long. At some point, I put a white stripe in it. I'm not sure what I was thinking. I wanted to look like Mad Max and Beyond Thunderdome. Because, you know, I'm a spitting double image of Mel Gibson in his prime. I mean, of course, right? But I started dressing a little better. Like I said, my mom bought me some nice clothes. I wasn't so resistant to looking good and looking like everybody else. I still did my stupid stuff. I bought a Pee Wee Herman shirt. I still liked Star Wars and talked about Ghostbusters and that sort of thing. But I was trying to play more by the rules, and my confidence grew so that I could actually talk to girls instead of just staring like a nudnik. So I could actually talk, you know, have a cohesive conversation. And because of that, I ended up taking a girl to the Lavender and Lace dance. Here's how it happened. My mother arranged for me to take a girl to the winter formal at another high school. So I had to take this girl, April, who was a family friend. And you know about family friends, you're never interested in them romantically. She was just like, I mean, she was practically a relative of mine. But she was insistent that I take her to this dance. And my mother, like, you're taking April to the dance. I don't want to take April to the dance. You're taking her. I ended up doing this twice. I took April to a dance, and I took this girl, Trisha, to a dance. And both times I was like, what am I doing here? I don't know anybody. I've got a mullet. I'm in a tuxedo. But the experience of doing that allowed me to, at my own high school, ask a girl out to the dance. I went up to this girl, Anna. She was in drama, and I said, would you like to go to Lavender and Lace with me? And I don't know if she had gas that day or she was not taking her medication, but she said, sure. And I said, okay, never mind. I won't bother. Wait, you said sure? Did you say yes? Yes, I'll go with you. Oh, my God. So I ended up taking this girl to Lavender and Lace. And, you know, typical me, my brother supplied the limousine. Now, my brother, we've talked on the show, at this exact moment in time, was a drug dealer. So the limo he brought me was bulletproof. It had giant, thick windows. And the guy that drove it was a drug mule. He'd made deliveries. So I picked her up. We went to the Velvet Turtle. We went to the Velvet Turtle in Anaheim and had a nice dinner at the Velvet Turtle. And then we went to the dance. It was at some hotel in Anaheim. And it was lovely. I mean, you go to the dance, you take pictures, you dance, and it's lovely. And then when it came time to leave, we went out to the parking lot, and the driver's not in the car. And I'm like, I don't know where he's at. There's no cell phones. I can't call him. I don't know where he's at. So finally, I go into the hotel's bar. He's at the bar having a drink, having a smoke, and it looked like he was selling drugs to the guy next to him. And I said, hey, we're ready to go. Yeah, I'll be right there, man. Dude, you're driving us tonight, and the lady would like to go. Yeah, man, I'll be right there, man. Oh, my God. I was so embarrassed. Oh, my God. And I don't get embarrassed. If you've listened to this show, I don't have that gene. This is a moment where I was like, I am so embarrassed. So he finally took us home in our bulletproof drug dealer limousine. I got a very nice goodnight kiss. More importantly, I got confidence. Finally, confidence with women. This is something I can do. It is not out of the realm of possibility that I could get a date, that I could get a girlfriend, that something could happen here so that I was not miserable all the time. So the girl that was in The Fatal French Dentist, who played my wife, I asked her to the prom. I had never planned on going to the prom, but it seemed like after Lavender and Lace, I can do this. I will go to the prom. Would you like to go to the prom with me? And she said, yes. I couldn't believe it. Now, the prom was different than Lavender and Lace. By this time, I had gotten my driver's license, so I wanted to drive her myself to the prom. Now, every car that we owned was burgified. If you don't know what burgified means, it means I lived with a guy named Don Berg who ruined everything we owned, destroyed it. Everything he touched turned to crap. So the only vehicle that we had that ran a damn, you don't want to take your prom date to the prom and then have the car break down. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, that's the worst. But the alternative was a Chinook. Do you know what a Chinook is? A Chinook is a truck with a camper shell on it that's actually one piece. It looks like a snail. So it was a manual transmission. I learned how to drive on that. So it was a stick. I'm driving a stick. We make all the arrangements. You know, going to prom was a big deal. You know, I had to go with this girl out to Montclair to go dress shopping one day. We spent all day dress shopping. But I enjoyed it because this was a world I had never been invited to. You know, I was never around girls like this. So, you know, she would try on dresses. I was like, this is like I'm in a movie. This really happens? You know, she finally picked a dress. She picked a white tuxedo for me. Oh, my. I think I got married in a white tuxedo finally, but the one I was wearing to prom, I mean, white tuxedo with tails. What on earth was I thinking? Why wasn't she made the choice? That's what I want you to wear. Absolutely. Whatever you say, I will wear it. So I get my white tails tuxedo on. I get my corsage, my boutonniere, and I drive over to her house and her parents come out, and her prom date is driving an RV with a full bedroom in it and a kitchen. Like, for me, this was just life. Again, the reality you're given, you just accept it. And this was the car that I had, and this was all that I had to get her to prom and back. So here I am to pick you up, and I'm sure all her dad saw was, this kid is driving a car with a bedroom in it. And I had no illusions of any kind of nonsense like that with this girl. That's not who I was back then, not who I am now. So It's one of those things where someone's upset with you, but you don't know why. Like, this guy seems really upset with me. I'm trying to pick up my date. We're taking pictures. I'm putting the corsage on her wrist. But this guy's like cooking. His brain is cooking. And it's all because of me. And I don't know. Much later, somebody probably said, Tucker, you're driving a bedroom around. Oh my God. I didn't even know. So, and I mean, she had a brother that went to school with me. And her brother wanted to kill me. Like, her brother just wanted to stab me in the face. And hey, that's fine. I get it. You know, it reversed the situation and I would have stabbed me in the face. But I mean, I knew my intentions were not bad at all. I just wanted to go to prom and like make this memory and put it in the books and get it over with and move on with my life and use it as some sort of boosting block in senior year to turn things around on the dating front. So I took her to prom and we had a good time. And I just remember, there was one weird moment at prom. Now, David was there. David came with this girl. He wore pink high top Converse. And I had a good time at prom. We ate there at the prom instead of going out to a restaurant. It was cheaper to do that. I mean, you already paid for it. And I remember finishing and looking over at my date and like admiring her dress and stuff. And she looked at me and she goes, "Did you just check me out?" And I, if you've ever seen the video for, this is so nerdy, Huey Lewis, Heart and Soul, there's a scene where he's dancing with the girl and you can see his eyes go from her feet all the way up. And that's the moment that flashed at me, like, did I just do that to her? Is that bad? I thought I was supposed to admire the way she looks. Hey, you look beautiful in your dress. Did you just check me out? Well, yes, we're on a date. I just checked you out. I don't understand. Like, I was so not into social cues. And this is where later in life, I self-diagnosed myself with low-grade Asperger's. Because parts of human emotions are, I'm Mr. Data. Like, I don't know. That's not compute. I don't understand. Is that wrong to check you out? We were on a date. Am I not supposed to look at your shoes and your dress and your hair and your corsage and your matching Bonbel lip gloss? Am I not supposed to look at all that and go, wow, you're beautiful? Am I just supposed to just not look and just say, I don't understand? But hey, if I could understand women, I'd be a gazillionaire, wouldn't I? So we had a good time at prom, at least I did. And I ended up like pseudo dating this girl for a short time. It was never going to work out. You know, it just wasn't. I get it. I was a complete nerd and she was about to make the cheerleading squad. And the minute she made the cheerleading squad, I was out. I get it. At the time, my heart was breaking because when you're 16, 17, you think that every girl is it. And you're going to get married and you're going to be together and it'll be like Brad and his girlfriend in Fast Times. And it just doesn't happen that way. High school's a trail of broken hearts and broken relationships, but that's what makes you a better person. And I never wished her any kind of ill will. I had a great time at prom. Didn't work out. Didn't work out. Signed my yearbook. That's all I care about, right? And so I closed out junior year knowing that senior year was going to be where it was at. I had plans to spend the summer writing a show to produce and concentrate on being creative. And if something happened on the dating front, that was great. And if it didn't, that was great too. You know, some people, high school ain't where it's at. For some, I know people, high school was the greatest time they ever had. And when it ended, they were crushed because nothing ever equaled those amazing years. And for me, it was the opposite. I couldn't wait to get out to start having amazing years. Everybody's different. The only constant we had, and I haven't talked about this yet, was the food at high school. They served nachos in the cafeteria. You could get there early, get chocolate milk for 35 cents and nachos, I think, with like 75 cents. They were a few chips covered in enough cheese sauce to qualify as a bowl of soup. And you'd lift the chip up and it would limp and fall over because it had so much cheese in it. I ate that a lot. I was also impressed that outside they had these snack bar windows where you could actually get a Coke, like a fountain Coke. They had it dialed so low that it only remotely tasted like Coke, but it was 25 cents. And I mean, that was a big deal. I mean, I used to have to bring a can every day in my lunch. Hey, it's right there for a quarter. Don't have to bring it nothing. Drink it, throw it away, you're done. I didn't eat a lot of food at high school. I didn't go through the lunch line very often. I usually brought my lunch. And by junior year, I had a pass to go off campus because it just carried over from sophomore year. I would go off campus and eat McDonald's or something. We used to drive all the way across town to the Plain Wrap hamburger stand to get 39 cent hamburgers and cheeseburgers. Good times, man. There was also a Tommy Burger where you get a hamburger covered in chili for like a buck. It was the old Del Taco there on what street is that? The one where it's right across from Excelsior. Pioneer? I think it's Pioneer. And so, again, like I said, junior year was all prep work. I was prepping myself on the date front, on the drama front. We had made enough money from the haunted house to do anything we wanted. We had been on the radio. It was a good time. Me and Felipe were leading the drama club together. And I went to graduation and watched a lot of my really close friends, and this girl I had a crush on all through high school, watched them graduate and leave. And that's bittersweet. Watching your friends grow up and move on, knowing you're gonna go back next year, but they're gone. And that's, I mean, junior year is kind of bittersweet like that. But there were big things on the horizon, you know, jobs and dates, and I would finally put on a production that made me proud. But that was all to come in senior year. And we will tackle that on a future episode of 91 Reasons.
Thanks for listening to 91 Reasons. Please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. Find us on Facebook. Is anyone even still listening?
And do you know what's happening around the world? This Thursday, May 19th, it's opening day for what will surely be the highest grossing movie of 2005, maybe of all time, Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, opening around the world simultaneously. And for Star Wars fans, this is the final chapter. And on the D's hotline right now, someone who might just be the ultimate Star Wars fan.
Hello, may the Force be with you.
Jeff. Yes? Tucker.
Yes, Lord Vader.
It's Lord Deezer.
Hey. What is thy bidding?
Hey, Jeff, it's Rick Dees and the weekly Top 40, my friend.
Hi, it's a pleasure to speak to you. I'm a big fan.
I'm a big fan of yours, man. I mean, anybody who would name his kid Luke Skywalker can't be all bad.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I love Star Wars, too, and I thank you so much for taking all these calls and throwing away all those other radio stations and shows and choosing us.
Well, I have to go with the best, don't I?
You are going with the Force, my friend.
Yes, sir.
How many times have you seen the first movie?
I've seen Star Wars, the first one, about 500 times.
I'm telling you, that's great. I bet by now you've memorized every line, haven't you?
Just about, yeah.
Is there anything that I would have probably missed by not seeing it 500 times? What do you think I would have missed?
Oh, there's some fun stuff in there, like there's a stormtrooper that actually hits his head as he comes through a door. And that's pretty funny. And Lucas actually paid homage to that in Attack of the Clones by having Jango Fett hit his head, which is a direct link since he's the clone that they're all made from.
It was
an accident that got turned into an inside joke, into an actual nod to the fans.
That's cool. And so everybody picks up on it. Now, that's a lot of money to spend on Star Wars and the merchandise, though, right?
Absolutely. Well, it becomes your life, pretty much.
Now, you named your son Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Now, Tucker's his last name, so Skywalker's his middle name?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And he understands that now. How old is he?
He's 8, and he actually really likes it. It's a talking point and something that he's really proud of, because, well, you know, he lives Star Wars every day here, so he can actually say that his name is Luke Skywalker, and that's just great.
And as a family, you have to be very excited about what's coming up here, don't you?
Oh, sure, yeah. We've got a big, big day planned to go see the movie. My whole family's going. The kids want to go in costume.
Mm-hmm.
Luke wants to dress up as Luke, so that's very cool.
There you go. Well, he has to. What a pleasure to talk to the ultimate Star Wars fan, Jeff Tucker. And, Jeff, thank you so much for listening to the Weekly Top 40. They tell me you do.
Rick. May the force be with you.
It is, as we head to number one on the Weekly Top 40.
The Weekly Top 40.
So why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?